If I was flipping burgers on the night shift, would you choose me?
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your accommodationist of music criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. We're listening to a song by Jason Derulo called Broke. And the other night...
That's what he wants you to do.
The other night, well, I was making dinner, as a matter of fact. And I happened to look at my my Twitter feed.
During dinner? That's family time.
No,
then.
No. I was making dinner.
Oh, okay. That's not
I
family.
I was preparing for family time.
Okay.
I was being an accommodationist for family time. And I saw the following written by my friend John Caramonica. It said, Jason Derulo, the most curious, risk-minded, and creatively savvy straight-ahead pop star.
Question mark.
Oh, is Jason.
Yes. Question.
Okay.
You know.
One of those.
Yeah, sure.
And then attached to it was a...
It's like an Upworthy headline or something. I don't know. You know, it's like that.
Attached to it was a link to a critical article that you wrote for the New York Times.
Hey.
And ever since I wrote that, my right eyebrow has been about 2 inches above my left one.
Right. I can see that.
I want to see if you can bring them into alignment today.
I think if I do that... It will be by bringing the other one up, not by bringing the right one down.
You're actually going to bring the noise about Jason Derulo.
Yo, Jason Derulo straight flames.
Tell me.
Here's the thing. Derulo's been flames. Let's just, we just need to like be accepting of this.
Okay.
Really, what good is criticism if I cannot take this position with authority and do a job of almost convincing you.
Are you trying to shock the last rockists out there or something?
No, I just feel like sometimes I'll be speaking with someone and they'll be like, but is it good or bad? You know, they'll read something that I've written. They're like, but is it good or bad?
Sure.
And I'm like, I literally can't think of like a less interesting axis of critical knowledge than good or bad. That's not exactly what we are doing here.
So far.
We're engaging in broader projects about skill and worth and talent and history and style.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Well, so far I'm with you.
I'm seeing that other eyebrow just millimetering up. So Jason Derulo has been a very easy person to dismiss for 5 years now.
Why is that?
Well, there's a number of reasons. Well, it's important to say he has a new album. It's called Everything Is Four because it is his fourth album. That's the most important thing. When Derulo first came out, he was under the sort of tutelage of J.R. Rotem. J.R. Rotem was a writer and producer, sort of like a hip-hop into pop writer and producer. Rotem sort of turned Derulo into this pop R&B, faintly Caribbean, light dance vocalist. And Derulo, who has a kind of a sweet voice, but not one with any real heft to it. It's not like, there's no husk, there's no
grain.
And considering he's in essence an R&B singer, you know, if he's anything, he's an R&B singer.
For lack of being anything else in
particular. Right, but that's actually the more important thing, which we'll get to. But in essence, he's an R&B singer, but there's no church. There's like literally no church in him, if that makes sense.
We're going to bring up church later.
And then we're going to go to church with Hozier. Mm. Derulo had a couple of hits on that first record that were probably the most anonymous pop hits of 2010 or 11 or whatever it was.
Right.
One was called What You Say, and I can't even remember what the second one was called, but it wasn't as good as What You Say.
And at the time you wrote about it.
I did.
And you said something like, this is what pop music is right now.
I think it was important to note that what J.R. Rotem had done that was interesting is effectively sneak R&B into pop, but took out so much of the R&B that you almost couldn't identify it. It was there in some ambient way, but you couldn't really identify it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought a lot about sort of deracination and you know, you have white appropriation of or white performance of black styles. People complain that they're neutered and that they lack some of the essential characteristics of the original. This was actually a black performer doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I was like, oh, what if this is the direction that pop goes? What if we do get to keep black performers, but sort of the characteristics end up changing?
At that point, what audience was he trying to reach It's not like he was going straight to early middle-aged listeners.
No. I mean, these are they're basically dance, not EDM dance pop, but they're dance pop records.
Right. I mean, I remember seeing him at Jingle Ball.
Hey, now. Do you remember seeing him at Jingle Ball? Like, remember?
No.
Like, you're aware that he was at Jingle Ball.
He came and went and was unremarkable.
Right.
There's something about Jason Rulo where at the heart of it, I always feel like this is okay music for middle-aged listeners.
Like, define middle-aged.
Well, let's keep going with your conversation, then we'll get
that
back
almost
to
got
that.
Dark.
So there's nothing dark about it.
So Derulo was someone who I thought his songs were important, but maybe he wasn't important.
Yeah.
Especially because he was so closely aligned with a producer-writer Svengali figure. And you think, okay, well, Rodham did it with Derulo. There's a guy named Iaz, and Rodham did the similar thing with Iaz, although slightly more Caribbean influenced. Derulo's from Haiti originally, but he was born and raised in Miami in Carroll City, I think.
He's of Haitian descent,
mm-hmm. Yes. And so it's also notable that, like, I feel like every year there's, like, a sort of reggae pop or Caribbean pop crossover. It's usually on Atlantic Records. Shouts to Craig Coleman. And this was sort of like a cousin to those records, I thought, what Rodham was doing. Derulo had a second album that I didn't think that much about. And then sometime, truly 2 years ago, because he started getting interesting, but it was not happening in America. It was happening in Europe. But last year is when he got interesting in America, mm-hmm. when those songs really started to take hold in America from the third album, which mm-hmm. is called Talk Dirty, or at least the American version was called Talk Dirty. I think he was more or less divorced from Rodham at this point. Maybe in name they're still attached in some way, but I think musically they're not working together. Not 100% sure, but I think so. Talk Dirty to me was probably the strangest and most ambitious collection of production on any pop record last year. It reminded me perversely of kind of like peak era Timbaland, taking unusual, unexpected sounds and weaving them into like very, very, very sticky production.
Do you mean unusual categorically or unusual sonically? This mixture of things is unusual because one is basically X kind of music. One is basically Y kind of music. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about that or are you talking about strange sounds?
I'm talking about strange sounds, although the other thing that you talk about is actually more what he's doing on the new album,
okay.
which we'll get to. I'm talking about strange sounds.
Right.
The strategy seemed to be Jason Derulo has a sort of like featherweight, ineffective, but like not unpleasant voice.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get people to pay attention to it? Oh, let's surround it by like incredibly unusual sounds. Very well produced. Like what's that thing called? Like a penny whistle or like a...
You mean a slide whistle?
Slide whistle. I think that's, yeah. I think that's what it goes. Yeah, exactly. I think
yeah.
Wiggle is a slide whistle or mm-hmm. something akin
yeah.
to that.
Yeah.
And they're compacted by like big money pop producers
right.
into songs that structurally are very much like other pop songs on the radio, but have this unique entry point, which is a sound. A lot of cases what happened on these records from the third album is the unusual sound drew you in, and Derulo probably could have been Usher on those records, or probably could have been Cody Simpson on those records, like Nick Jonas. Like, it almost didn't matter, but Derulo, I assume, was in charge on some level and saying, I want to sound like this. I want to be surrounded by these sounds. As a collection of songs, I thought Talk Dirty was like very, very good. It was on my top 10 last year and top 10 albums. I think people are sort of like, why would you possibly do that? Why would you possibly care about Jason Derulo? And I think the fact that after the last 18 months in which he's had 4 or 5 major hits, the fact that people are still like, why would you care about Jason Derulo? Maybe speaks of some like potential broader ugliness in the pop discourse and not so much about me liking Jason Derulo.
Yeah, but it also raises the question of, do we want to know that a brain, a decision-making brain, mm-hmm. a personality is at the center? Somebody that, you know, you can project things on, mm-hmm. somebody that you can wonder about,
mm-hmm.
somebody. For you, it sounds like you're saying the next step in pop music is that doesn't matter.
Diffuse brain. What you just said reminded me a little bit of the conversation we had a couple weeks ago about Shamir.
Yeah, we always keep coming back to this.
And weirdly, it's like not a problem when it's Shamir because Shamir's cool. But when it's Jason Derulo and Jason Derulo's not cool, somehow it's like more of a problem.
All right. That's interesting.
So
should we hear one of the songs from the last record?
Yeah. Let's listen to Wiggle, because I think Wiggle is the song where I accepted Jason Derulo into my life based off of Wiggle.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Just a little bit of. Patty cake with no hands. Got me in this club making wedding plans. If I take pictures while you do your dance, I can make you famous on Instagram. Hot damn it. Woo. Your booty like two planets. Woo. Go ahead and go ham sandwich. Woo. Whoa, I can't stand it. Cause you know what to do with that big fat butt.
That was Wiggle by Jason Derulo.
Do, 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 do. Get your slide whistle. Let's get it. Let's have a brief sidebar here, right? I know you're into listening. I know listening is a thing that's important to you.
True.
Let's talk about the moment of me hearing Wiggle and really, really hearing Wiggle. I'm in a car. I'm on vacation. I'm about as relaxed as one can be. If I remember correctly, I'm driving on a sort of like unpleasant road. But other than that, I'm basically at my most open and my most available.
Were you on the right side of the road?
My side of the road is always the right side of the road. But I was at my most of it, like all the chakras were aligned. You know what I mean? Like I was open to receiving. And this song came on the radio and I start hearing that slide whistle. And then I hear Jason Derulo, who's not a great power singer, but is interesting. You know, he hits the pocket, his cadences, you know, he knows he's rhythmic. He's rhythmically intelligent in his vocals. And I just like the top of my head flew off. And I was like, this just sounds nuts, especially on a pop station where it was probably Katy Perry before and probably Katy Perry after. This is so good. And it's not avant-garde, but it's interesting. And it maybe draws upon things that we looked at as avant-garde. Like I said, we looked at Timbaland. It reminded me of a Timbaland record, like a pop Timbaland. It's basically the pop Timbaland records that Timbaland never figured out how to make. At that moment, I basically allowed for the possibility that Jason Derulo was more than a pretender. There was an active thing going on. And then when I listened to the other singles, many of which employed similar tricks or similar approaches, I was like, this is not an accident.
You are describing somebody who makes arresting songs, but you acknowledge he may seem to have no center or something like that.
It's a hollow, it's like a styrofoam center. Not a lot of protein. Well, although I did call him tofu, which apparently is high in protein, not that I would know.
Spongy.
Sure.
Okay, so how can somebody who is essentially spongy and not, you know, just a serious molten core at the center?
Rockist.
Do you know what I mean?
Rockist.
How can a person like that also be the most curious, risk-minded, and creatively savvy, straight-ahead pop star?
Those two things might be more in alignment than you would think. Because, like, let's use Katy Perry as a straw person, right? You say, oh, well, Katy Perry is a creative pop person. Then all she is in her DNA is a quote-unquote pop singer. And she does that in a way that sort of emanates outward from her core.
Yeah.
Derulo, I feel like, is doing an opposite thing. Derulo is, like, making himself available to receive all sorts of different approaches and styles.
Yeah.
And that to me is pretty fascinating. Especially, you got to assume it's all being done consciously and it's being done with intent and you know, and with vision. When I heard those records, I was like, here's a guy who was willing to put himself in the middle of songs that sounded unexpected and then figured out how to not get lost inside those songs.
Yeah.
And he did that easily 5, 6, 7 times on that album. And that was, I thought, very impressive. It's a different gift because I don't think any person anywhere is like, my favorite singer is Jason Derulo. Singer. But the idea that Jason Derulo can basically be an architect of these kinds of records and then have hit after hit after hit and still remain sort of fundamentally anonymous to the point where, like, your eyebrow is still 2 inches up, that's maybe a different kind of gift.
So you think it's an individual skill. It's not an anonymity. He's not just generically capable.
No, I think it's a specific
skill.
It's a specific thing, but I do think
it's a specific skill that not a whole lot of people have.
Right, because it requires a certain degree of anonymity / humility / hiding. And maybe it's literally just making the most of a different toolkit. Because here's the thing. I have a paragraph in the piece where I'm like, you know, he's just not a good singer. He's not that good of a singer. He's whatever. He lacks this. if Jason Derulo did have a better voice, mm-hmm. or more traditionally a better, more robust singing voice, we wouldn't get these songs.
You mean because the outward skill of his music would crowd out all that other stuff,
right? Or he
that he's letting in,
or he wouldn't feel like he had to look for it. I'm not saying that choosing production like this is overtly a compensation, mm-hmm. but I am saying that, like, you know, and this, it's one of those things where it's, what do they say about people who are blind? It's like your other skills get enhanced.
Sure.
Here, there is something like that going on here, mm-hmm. where he's not a great singer, but maybe his ear for understanding pop song construction and unique approaches has been enhanced by that.
But I want to ask you about the new record.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been talking about the third record very convincingly.
Which is a very important record.
Yeah. Let's talk about the new one.
Here's the other thing that makes me think Jason Derulo knows exactly what he's doing. A guy who had so much success with a record like Talk Dirty, who's not risky, up for the challenge, whatever. A guy like that would probably say, I'm going to make Talk Dirty 2, Electric Boogaloo. I'm going to just go back and like drink from the same well. That is not what is happening on this new album. And that's what's most striking to me, is it's another pivot. And I'm like, well, here's a guy who's either trying to stay out in front of himself, or he's trying to stay out in front of competitors, or he's trying to stay out in front. And we opened with Broke. And Broke is not going to, I don't think it's going to be like the big hit on this record. Mm-hmm. But just the very fact that like he's in his art phase and he's like, I'm going to get Keith Urban to play banjo. Keith Urban's like an exceptional stringed instrument player.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get Stevie Wonder to play, frankly, not that good harmonica on this record and not that good singing on this record. But the idea of him saying, I'm going to put all this together and somehow make it cohere, is a step beyond what he did on the last record.
Is this the art phase, though? I mean, this to me, that song sounds like, it sounds like the kind of thing that you hear on a decent gospel record these days.
Okay.
I mean, gospel being one genre where different kinds of music coexist mm-hmm. peacefully, and it's no big deal. Like, all this kind of stuff is in a blender, including country music.
Do you think that's part of his diet?
I have no idea.
I mean, I'm going to guess no.
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, this does not sound exceptional to me. This sounds mainstream.
Your mainstream is your mainstream.
Okay.
I love it.
I mean, I even want to say mainstream for older folks.
That's interesting. I think that's certainly valid. And definitely this song is the most, yeah, probably the most mature or grown song on this new Derulo album. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fair point. My guess would be he drove to the location in a different car mm-hmm. on a different road.
Yeah.
But I don't think what you're saying is wrong or unfathomable. Whew. No, I think that's fair. But I would imagine if you played him some of the records you're talking about.
Yeah.
He'd probably like scratch his head and be like, I've never heard of this stuff. Uh-huh. That'd be my guess.
Who's the executive producer on this record?
I'm pretty sure he's one of them.
Yeah.
The name's escaping me. I don't know. Do you think it's someone, Kirk Franklin? It's like whoever's producing a Jamie Grace record or something?
No, I'm not saying that there's a gospel conspiracy. I'm just saying you were going fairly hard on the kind of auteur talk a minute ago.
Sure.
About Jason Derulo.
So you're suggesting that there may be a different architect. It's totally possible.
This is pop music.
Yeah, it's totally possible.
Okay.
I think that's a fair thing about Broke, but Broke is also part of a larger kind of move on this album to bring people into Derulo's world, which is strange because Derulo's world does not have rules.
Does it even have parameters? Does it have boundaries?
No, and yet...
Does it have a flag? An anthem?
I think it's this, maybe. it's this white scrim that's next to us.
Yeah.
I think it's that. Beige, maybe more.
Colorless.
Yes. We talk about sort of pop as like a place where kind of like racial politic wars kind of flare up, you know? And people agonize over Iggy Azalea and they agonize over Macklemore. Mm-hmm. No one's agonizing over Jason Derulo. And I don't necessarily think it's that they're not agonizing over him because he's black. I think they're not agonizing over him because they don't think he's important.
But those people you just mentioned give you something to agonize about. They put a persona out there.
Okay, but at the same time that all of this is happening, you can make a credible argument that there is a crisis in terms of R&B's broader mainstream representation. Apart from Usher, and Usher is like kind of only 50-50 at this point, but apart from Usher, you don't have true R&B records that we understand, like, you know, radio R&B, mm-hmm. to say nothing of like classic influenced R&B.
Right.
That stuff is not even entering the pop conversation right now. Mm-hmm. if you're going to call Drew an R&B singer, which I kind of almost don't think you should, but if you are, you could say he's the most popular R&B singer of 2014 and 2015, which is nuts because there's no R&B in him, barely any R&B in him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of a parallel crisis.
Yeah.
But no one's agonizing over it. And again, I don't think it has anything to do with race. I think it has to do with the fact that he is being dismissed outright, not as someone who is making records that are important. And like part of the task here and part of the reason we're sitting down and doing this is because I think it's important.
Well, you see something sort of momentous about Jason Derulo. I mean, do you see him as like the possible future of pop music or the possible future of just R&B?
It's more of a pop thing.
Right.
It's important to me to talk about Derulo. When I say cross genre, I'm not saying he's going to go make a country record. You know, like, I'm not saying that. But the fact that he is so tofu-like, so chameleonic, and can sort of effectively more. I mean, he's got Jennifer Lopez on this record. He's got Meghan Trainor on this record. He's got people on the same album who should not be on this album, like who should all not be living on the same album. The idea that he can traverse all of those collaborators and all of the styles that are given to those collaborators relatively cleanly, that to me feels like a future model of pop. And so when I say cross genre, like that's why I'm not interested in Katy Perry as like a counterpoint, because Katy Perry can literally only do the one thing. And here's a guy who, because he kind of can't do the one thing, mm-hmm. can actually do 5 to 10 different things and is choosing to do 5 to 10 different things.
Okay. Now, this is I feel like this is getting weirdly semantic and academic and okay. philosophical, mm-hmm. but you bring up the song Timber by mm-hmm. Kesha and Pitbull
sure.
as a point of comparison with Broke. You say that a Broke is so seamless, that's a kind of an important word mm-hmm. there, seamless and effective that it one-ups Kesha and Pitbull's dance country smash, Timber, in its easy hybridity.
Mm-hmm.
I read that sentence and I thought, wait a minute. Timber actually has a center. It has a personality. It's almost challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of combination of things.
Yeah.
So you're saying that Jason Derulo one-ups it. How?
Well, I think through one particular lens. I don't disagree with what you're saying about Timber, but there's something about Timber when I listen to it where I'm like, the sub-narrative of Timber is we are trying to make a country dance. We are people who do not make country dance records making a country dance record.
So you're aware of the seams.
It is a performance. It's a carnival show.
You don't like performances?
I do. I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's very blatant.
Yeah.
It's a loud shirt. And what Derulo is doing is all the same touchstones, but it's not loud. And you're like, he's selling this. And there's literally no good reason for him to be able to sell this.
Mm.
And yet he's selling it. And that's a skill. As a song, I probably like Timber a little bit better. I kind of love Timber the way a lot of people do. I kind of like it a little bit better probably. But Derulo does a thing that I think Kesha and Pitbull never could have done, which is like turn off the Klieg lights and just get down to business.
John Caramonica, you could theorize a fox out of a hen house. Do you know what I'm saying?
Do you know what you're saying?
I don't even know anymore.
Yeah. So where's your other eyebrow? It looks pretty high to me. Looks pretty high to me, Ulf.
Where are we going to end up?
Let's close with Want to Want Me. Want to Want Me is like the big hit, capital B, capital H, big hit on this record, right? Want to Want Me is, I mean, I think I likened it to the New Kids on the Block. It's a very weird, sprightly synth pop, like not a new romantic synth pop, like basically when synthesizers got fully mainstreamed into like ecstatic normal teen pop. So I guess we're looking at like 86 maybe or 87, something like that. It's like just a dead on copy of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as signature as the third album songs, not as signature as Wiggle mm-hmm. and Trumpets and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a song where he's so denied himself at this point that this may be the true death of the self. Like there may actually be nothing left after this song. It is true blankness. Here's the thing. It's not what I ultimately want from him.
Yeah.
What I ultimately want from him are these sort of reach out, reconstituting moments.
Yeah.
That's what I think probably his strong point is. Want to Want Me is basically like, how do we erase Jason Derulo from Jason Derulo songs when he himself was only like a faint shadow of a thing to start with? That bums me out.
I see a book forming here. Or maybe just a, series of tweets.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Web first. Web first.
Oh, we are web first. That's true. There's nothing else to say.
Want to want me.
Thanks for listening. You can read John Caramonica's auteur theory of Jason Derulo at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez.
Ew.
You can listen to all the Jason Derulo you want.
That's a thing, man. Like, you say that with such derision, and yet you should want to listen to a lot of Jason Derulo. Let's give these people what they need.
You open the door.